Good morning, everyone, and thank you for waiting. Welcome to JBS SA and JBS USA first quarter of 2022 results conference call. With us here today, we have Gilberto Tomazoni, Global CEO of JBS, Guilherme Cavalcanti, Global CFO of JBS, André Nogueira, President of Operations in North America, Wesley Batista Filho, President of Operations in Latin America, Oceania, and the Global Plant-Based Business, and Christiane Assis, Investor Relations Director. This event is being recorded, and all participants will be in a listen-only mode during the company's presentation. After JBS's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this call, please press star zero to reach the operator. Before proceeding, let me mention that forward statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of JBS's management. They involve risks and uncertainties because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Gilberto Tomazoni, Global CEO of JBS. Mr. Tomazoni, you may begin your presentation.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for joining this first quarter 2022 results. We will highlight throughout this presentation. We ended the first quarter of 2022 with significant results. We posted strong numbers, which give us immense satisfaction, showing our resilience in such a challenging market. The strong performance of our beef business in North America, the pork business in the United States, and Pilgrim's Pride, the business improvements in Australia, the brand advancement in Brazil, the focus on managing what was under our control, our capability for innovation, and our relentless pursuit of operational excellence were all key to posting very strong numbers during the quarter. We had double-digit revenue growth in all business units. We also made advances in EBITDA margin in practically all areas. As Guilherme will detail later, we increased our net income to $982.7 million, with net revenue of $7.4 billion and adjusted EBITDA of $1.9 billion. We continue to invest and grow. Our CapEx was $418 million, with more than 50% of that in growth and organic growth projects, and another $204.5 million in M&A operations. We also delivered a significant shareholder returns in the short term, returning $346 million in share buyback in the first quarter and an additional $204 million share buyback in April. We just announced $425 million in dividends. This represents $1 billion in shareholders returns. This allow us to deliver short-term return and continuous of our growth strategy. All this ended up in dollar. Our leverage fell from 1.67x to 1.53x in dollar. In Brazilian reais, the decline was even more significant from 1.76x to 1.36x in the period. One of our key strengths you can see on the map on slide two, our platform, diversified by region and by protein types. When we face challenging environments and cycle in a specific business and regions, we can compensate across other business thanks to our geographical platform. This was shown once again in the result for this quarter. Our platform is very hard to replicate, if not impossible. Even more, if you consider we are constantly strengthening and further with new growth avenues. That is the case of the aquaculture business. We want to grow this business at the same way as we made in poultry and pork. We acquired a company to serve as a platform for expansion in the seafood sector, the fastest growth protein worldwide. Plant-based is another growth avenue. We already have a global alternative platform offering products in Europe, US, Australia, and Brazil. We don't know yet how the full potential of this market, but we believe that plant-based protein can play an important role in closing the protein gap and meeting the global demand for food. Cultivated protein also has a role to play. Last week, we announced of completion of our biotech food acquisitions. Our focus now is to scale the technology with investment and a new industrial plant in Spain. We also announced our new JBS Biotech Innovation Center in Brazil to develop our own cultivated protein technology. On top of this, we have improved our ability to innovate, offer high-value products, and build brands, all to get closer to our customers. With more than 150 brands worldwide, by the end of 2025, our goal is to achieve 10 brands with a revenue of $1 billion, over $1 billion. JBS is in a unique competitive position to continue delivering strong results in the short term while continues to invest in our growth. Sustainability is at the core of our strategy, aligned with our ESG and net zero commitments. We believe that no company can operate independently from the world around it. That's why we are contributing to the social and economic development in the region where we operate. We have included some of these initiatives in our presentation. Having the best people in the right place and a strong company culture is also the key. Our team is the driving force behind the success of our multi-protein platforms worldwide. To reinforce our missions, values, and our beliefs among all leaderships, from supervisor to C-level executives, this year we are rolling out JBS culture events around the world. Our people and our culture have brought us here and are central for our continued success. We are a people company. Thank you, and now I will pass to Guilherme.
Thank you, Tomazoni. Let's go over the operational and financial highlights for the first quarter of 2022, starting on slide 24, please. I would like to start by highlighting two important debt issuances at the beginning of this year, which are the JBS first 30-year bond and the first agricultural receivable certificates in dollars for the retail. Both the bond and the agricultural receivables had a much higher demand than initially offered, which demonstrates the company's credibility with the capital markets and the recognition of the work that we have been done in terms of liability management. These issues made JBS to increase its average maturity debt from 6.3 years in the first quarter of 2021 to 8.2 years in the first quarter of 2022. For the same period, our average cost of debt dropped from 4.9% to 4.4%. And financial leverage in dollars remained at a very comfortable level at 1.5 times net debt to EBITDA. We have invested $1 billion in the first quarter of 2022 with the following breakdown. We returned $346 million to shareholders through share buybacks. If we include the share buybacks made in April 2022, the return was $550 million. I would also like to point out that last night we announced the cancellation of 26.7 million treasury shares that we bought on April and a new buyback program of 113 million shares. Additionally, we also announced the distribution of interim dividends in the amount of 1 real per share, totaling approximately $425 million. We concluded the acquisition of King's Group, one of the market leaders in the production of Italian charcuterie, and Rivalia, the leader in hog breeding and processing porks in Australia. The total investment considering the two acquisitions was $204 million. This week, we also announced the acquisition of the control of the Spanish company Biotech Foods, one of the global leaders in the development of biotechnology for the production of cultivated protein. Investment in the new facility is estimated $41 million. We also invested $418 million in modernization, expansion, and maintenance of our production units. And we invested more than $90 million globally in ESG initiatives. Hence, considering the share buybacks in April, the dividends in May, and biotech, the total invested was $1.7 billion. Finally, I would like to point out that the return on invested capital was 26% considering the first quarter last 12 months, being the best quarter of the company's history. The best first quarter. Now move to slide 25, where we present the financial and operational highlights for the quarter. In the first quarter of 2022, we achieved net revenues of $17.4 billion, which represents an increase of 21% in the annual comparison. The adjusted EBITDA for the quarter was $1.9 billion, which represents an EBITDA margin of 11%. Net income was a total of $983 million in the quarter, which represents earnings per share of 44 cents. I would also like to highlight that considering the first quarter 2022 last 12 months, once again, we reached record results. Net revenue was $68.7 billion. Adjusted EBITDA was $9.2 billion and net income $4.4 billion and earnings per share of $1.83. To conclude this slide, the company's board also approved in the first quarter the cancellation of 129 million shares in treasury, added to the cancellation of 26.7 million announced last night, totally approximately of 156 billion shares canceled, as well as a new buyback program with the objective of maximizing the value generation to the shareholder through an efficient management of its capital structure. Please now move to slide 27. The operating cash flow in the quarter was $66 million. Free cash flow for the quarter was a negative $542 million. It is worth mentioning that the first quarter of the year has the characteristic of consuming cash due to the concentration of payments to suppliers and the buildup of inventories. First quarter 2022, last 12 months, the operating cash flow was $4.9 billion. Free cash flow was $2.3 billion. And excluding non-recurring payments of $719 million and the expansion capex of $1 billion, the free cash flow for the year would have been $4 billion with a conversion of 45% from the adjusted EBITDA. We have also increased investments in the company's organic growth. In the graph of the bottom of the slide, we have our capex in the quarter totaling $480 million, of which 57% is related to investment in modernization and expansion. Now, please, let's move to slide 28, where we have the evolution of our debt profile. Net debt in the first quarter was $14 billion, which represents an increase of $1.7 billion in the annual comparison due to share buybacks in the amount of $1.7 billion, M&As of totally of $1.9 billion, $1.4 billion in dividends, and non-recurring payments of $719 million. These events were partially offset by the cash generation of $2.3 billion and the positive impact of the exchange rate variation of $2 billion. Net leverage was 1.5 times in dollars and 1.4 4 times in reais, while interest expense coverage increased from 8.5 to 12 times in 2022. And it's important to highlight our comfortable liquidity position. We end the quarter with a cash position of $3.6 billion, together with the revolving line of $2 billion, allow JBS to end the quarter with a total availability of $5.6 billion. Moving to the bottom of the slide, I highlighted our average cost of debt in dollars of 4.1%. Considering the issuance of the agriculture receivables in April of $253 million, the average debt maturity went from 6.3 years to 8.2 years. Now let's move to the business unit's performance. Starting with Seara on slide 29, net revenue grew 21% in the first quarter, posting growth in both volumes and prices. Sales in the domestic market, which accounted for approximately 48% of the unit's revenue for the period, the prepared products category maintained its growth trend and recorded an increase of 17% in average sales price and 0.6% in volume. It is worth mentioning an important achievement. According to Kantar, in the Brand Footprint Brazil 2022 ranking, Seara is among the 5 most chosen brands by Brazilians. This important achievement is the result of intense work with the objective of increasing brand preference and solidifying leadership in several categories. In the export market, net revenue increased by 25% in relation to the first quarter 2021 due to a 13% growth in sales volume and a 10.5% growth in average prices, despite the temporary suspension for exports to Saudi Arabia and the recovery of the Chinese swine herd. The scenario for production costs remained very challenging in the first quarter, with the average cost of corn and soybean meal rising 13 and 4% year over year respectively, remaining at high levels according to the Esalq data. Now moving to JBS Brazil on slide 30, we see the revenue for the quarter growing 24% year over year, reaching $2.7 billion. In the domestic market, the macroeconomic scenario remains very challenging, putting pressure on beef consumption, which has already reached one of the lowest levels ever recorded. The profitability of this unit continues to be impacted by the average price of cattle, which according to the data published by CPE-Esalq increased around 11% in the average price for the quarter, being 340 reais per arroba. The export market was the highlight of the quarter, with net revenue recording a significant increase of 45% when compared to the last year, mainly due to the growth of 17% in volume and 20% in the average sales prices for beef in natura in reais, mainly driven by the resumption of Brazilian exports to China at the end of 2021. Moving to slide 31, at JBS Beef North America, and now speaking in dollar terms and in US GAAP, JBS Beef North America revenue reached $5.5 billion in the first quarter, an increase of 27% year over year, and the adjusted EBITDA totaled $792 million and a margin of 14.3%. These results do not include JBS Australia, which is now reported separately. In the domestic market, the demand contributed positively to the net revenue growth, driven mainly by the recovery of the food service channel and the sustained performance of the retail compared to the same period of the previous year. In the international market, despite of the continuous slowness of American ports, the volume export was more than 6% higher compared to the previous years. The Asian market continues to be the most important market for the American beef exports. On the cost side, results were impacted by the increase in relevant inputs such as labor and logistics. Moving on to slide 32, we have JBS Australia. As of this quarter, we will be disclosing the results separately. Therefore, it's important to provide a little more detail on the business unit. Briefly, JBS Australia is the largest meat and food processing company in the country, with operations in beef, sheep, pork, fish, and prepared foods. JBS Australia produces a wide range of high-quality beef and lamb products. The business unit is also the largest Australian manufacturer of ham, bacon, salami, and cold cuts under the Primo brand. J- JBS recently announced the acquisition of two companies in the region, Huon Aquaculture, a salmon producer, and Rivalia, which produces high-quality pork for Australian markets. Now talking about the results, net revenue was $1.4 billion, an increase in 36% compared to the first quarter of 2021, and adjusted EBITDA was $93.2 million with a margin of 6.6%. Both the domestic market and exports contributed positively to these results, even in the face of a very challenging cost scenario that puts pressure on the region's profitability. As a result, the EBITDA margin grew by 5.8 percentage points from 8.8% to 6.6%. Now moving to JBS USA Pork, in first quarter 2022, net revenue was $1.9 billion, an increase of 18% year over year. Adjusted EBITDA reached $187 million with a 9.8% EBITDA margin. In the domestic market, the strong demand for pork supported price during the quarter, favoring the segment's margins, which were at higher levels in the annual comparison. On the other hand, higher operating and live animal costs partially pressured results. In the international market, USDA figures show that U.S. pork export volumes were down 20% year over year in the first quarter, mainly explained by the China's domestic pork production, which recovered after the African swine fever outbreak. The reduction in exports to China were partially offset by the good performance of Mexico, that increased 42%. Hugo's Pride, on the slide 34, presented net revenues of $4.2 billion in the quarter, an increase of 29.5% year over year. Adjusted EBITDA reached $502 million with an EBITDA margin of 12%. In the US, the food service channel recovered to the pre-COVID volume levels, while demand in the retail chain remains strong despite a challenging inflationary scenario. In Mexico, the good profitability is explained by the seasonality of the period investments in brand products and good management of the supply chain despite the rise in grain prices. In Europe, the scenario is still quite adverse despite a slightly recovery in the quarterly comparison. To finish, I would like to move to slide 35 that shows that our exports totaled $4.5 billion in the first quarter, with approximately 180 countries taking part of these exports. With that, I would like to open to our question and answer session.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, press star 2. Our first question comes from Ben Theurer with Barclays.
Perfect. Good morning, and thank you very much, and obviously congrats on those strong results. Two questions, if I may. So first, Seara obviously was pretty much under pressure during the quarter, and We've seen other companies struggling in January, but could you give us maybe a little bit of more detail, granularity within the quarter, how things moved from January into March and what you've been seeing so far in the second quarter, and what's your expectation on Seara's margin, which obviously is not at a level, I guess, you're pleased to see the margin? That would be my first question.
Thank you, Ben, for the question. I will ask for Wesley to answer this question to you.
Morning, Ben. So, yeah, absolutely. We don't see the first quarter result for Seara as a result that will be our result going forward. We had a quarter that started off in January, very, very tough. We had a domestic market that was under a lot of pressure, but we saw that recover during the quarter in the domestic market and also in the export market. We also had within the quarter the exchange rate devaluing, the US dollar devaluing against the real, and that was another important pressure in our results for the quarter. We did increase prices in US dollar to counter effect that devaluation of the US dollar. But that the effect of that we saw more in March and starting here the second quarter. So again, started the quarter with a result that was very difficult in January, and we saw a gradual increase throughout until the quarter until March, and we see the beginning of the second quarter actually better than March. So we are optimistic that this result for Ciara won't be repeated in the second quarter and throughout the rest of the year. That's a little bit about Ciara and forecast.
And Ben, let me to add. I think one important thing to look at the Ciara results. Ciara results, even under pressure, they keep growing. Yeah. And this is mainly because of increased preference of the consumer. And then there is two indicators that link it to the preference, is the penetrations and the repurchase. This is, Ciara is growing very fast in these two indicators. And that means you can predict the future of the company, the future of the brand.
Yeah, perfect. And then my second question is very similar, but actually from more on the opposite side of things. In beef North America, obviously it was an exceptionally strong quarter with a margin in the almost mid-teens. But what we saw more recently, at least industry data, is indicating a little bit of a more of a choppy ride. So could you share maybe some initial thoughts on the current environment and what your expectations are heading into summer, into the grilling season? On one side, obviously, cattle availability, but one thing is if they're available, the second thing is at what price, so maybe a little bit about that. And what you're seeing on the demand side, be it for beef, but then aside from that, for all the drop value, be it the heights, the fats and so on, which obviously has been a quite attractive market recently. So just to understand a little bit the dynamics, input cost versus output, what you're getting. Thank you.
Andre, I think you are in the best condition to answer this question.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for the question. You're right. First quarter was good, very strong. The key fundamentals for the business continue to be very positive. If you look at the USDA report about cattle on feed, we are in a record level, higher than last year by 1.7% for the same period. Global demand, very, very strong, especially coming from Asia for us here in North America. China continue to grow in a pretty strong pace overall. Japan, that was quiet for quite a period of time, came back pretty strong. We think that Japan and Korea both have very low inventory. And as they go back to normal, they should be big, big buyers. And they're very relevant. Again, for North America. Domestic, we're seeing that retail price is still in a pretty high level. I think that the retail will have all the incentives to promote much more beef as we start the grilling season. We're talking for our retail partners and we see that. So overall, we're very positive. When we look at the industry data, you need to remember that's a very commodity industry data, and our portfolio of products are very different than that, with much more value-added products, with much more programs that are not captured by that industry data. Just to give you a few examples, our CVA, that's beef and pork, a value-added business, marinated, cuts, branded, we grew 40% in volume compared with the same quarter of last year. Our Swift brand, that's very strong in pork and become very strong in beef in the retail, we grew more than 20% compared to the same quarter of last year. So that's all what it's not captured in the market data. On top of that, you already commented, and you are absolutely right, what you call drop credit. That's all the byproducts things that we take out in the harvest floor have been going up in value year over year, quarter over quarter, and we are over $50, $6 more in Q2 2022 compared to the same quarter of last year in value. So that goes straight to the bottom line. And this is because of all the renewable fuel, what's going on in grain. So we don't see any weakness in that coming anytime soon. And that's not captured by the industry data that only look the commodity cattle with the commodity cutouts. So I expect that we're going to see a movement in the cutout price as we start the green season, as demand starts to kick up in the domestic market, both here and in Canada, and we will continue to see pretty strong demand for the export. What we need to wait and see is, with all this inflation that's impacting the people globally, but for sure here in the U.S. and in Canada, with price of gas, price of rent, how this will impact the net income of the population, especially the low-income population. That's the population that can change more in terms of consumption, that they can trade off in beef to chicken or from middle cuts to ground beef, because they are seeing a high inflation overall in several areas of their life. On the other hand, this low income is the one that in the U.S. Have been seeing the biggest increase in compensation in the last 2 years, and continue to be a very tight labor, and we will continue to see an increase in wage for this population. This increase in wage vis-a-vis higher cost in inflation, what would be the net disposable income, and how this will impact beef, especially middle cuts, for the future, we need to see. I think that at this point, we are very positive in terms of demand, global demand very strong, U.S. demand, we're just going to start to see the grilling season that always is a strong season. So when I compare all these and I look the overall JBS portfolio and what we have invested the last several years in terms of innovation, in terms of value added, in terms of programs, in terms of brands, I'm very positive for the remainder of the year. We're going to see, of course, I already said that last quarter, specifically beef North America tight in the spread compared to the same period of last year. But I think I strongly believe that the beef continue to be in a very strong level.
Perfect, Andrea. Great caller. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Priya Ori Gupta with Barclays.
Good morning, and thank you so much for taking the question. A couple of just administrative ones, if I could start with. You know, on the last call, you had given us an update that you were expecting to sort of streamline the issuer structure on the bond side and sort of collapse that to JBS USA over the first half of this year. I was hoping you could give us progress on that. And then secondly, is there any update that you could give us on the progress you're making towards registering the bonds and some of the requirements that are needed there? And then I have a second question. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Priya. On the first question, at the end of March, beginning of April, bonds at the SA entity was assumed by the JBS USA entity, as I mentioned in that call. So that you see this difference from the second quarter onwards. And about the registering the bonds, I think one of the major requirements is to have SOX compliance, which we have already running the tests in USA, in Ceará, but some of the subsidiaries and also at the SA level, we're still having to finish the SOX compliance program before being able to register the bonds. So that's where we are. We have this ongoing project to have SOX compliance in the entire JPS. So once this is done, we'll be able to register the bonds in the SEC.
Thank you. And then I guess if I could just follow up a little bit on sort of the last point you made with regards to Ben's question on sort of how inflation is impacting consumer behavior. I think you talked about it a little bit more in the context of beef. But could you share your thoughts on what you're seeing on the pork side as well, and just some of the discussions you're having with retailers in terms of pricing conversations for the pork segment? Thank you.
So just to be clear, we need to see what will be the impact, correct? We need to see what will be the net impact. It's not clear yet, because for one side you have, of course, high inflation in several segments, especially in gas and rents and things that impact the day by day of the people. That for sure impacted their perspective. On the other hand, you have higher salary. One of the source of the inflation is the labor market in the U.S. that has been very, very tight. And because of the labor market has been very, very tight, especially the low income, we're seeing a pretty high increase in wages. That's what we did in our plans to become more competitive and continue to attract labor. We raised compensation at pretty strong level in the last 2 years. So that's more income for the people on one side. The other side is inflation. What would be the net of that, and if that will impact any type of consumption, the food side is still for us to see for the next several quarters. It's not clear for me. Beef price, cutout price now compared how was 6-7 months ago is lower. That's why I'm saying that retailers will have all the incentive to promote more beef during the summer grilling. We're going to have less pork production in the U.S. This year compared to last year. So expect that pork price will continue to be in a pretty good level. So how this will reflect in the price at the retail, still for us to see. If this will represent that people will trend down from middle meats to ground beef or to chicken, it's still for us to see. I think that's too early for us to tell that. What I can say that overall, globally, demand for protein continue to be very, very strong. And when you see in the beef side, the market that U.S. compete, like Japan and Korea, we always need to remember that Australia, that we have a big operation in Australia that's an important producer, an important export of beef and lamb globally. The production of Australia is still way down compared with what we the normal production, 30-40% down. So this is less beef available globally. That's why the demand has been so strong. That's why the price has been in a so strong level. And I don't see anything that will change that in any short term.
And Priya, in case like this, and we have high inflation and to affect the consumer power, the food is the last category to suffer. Even we can be moving among the categories, but it will be less to suffer. And this is one of the advantages of JBS, that we have a diversified platform. We have a diverse multi-proteins, and we are really prepared for face this challenge and win the consumer movements.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carla Casella with JP Morgan.
Hi, just a follow on to Priya's question there in terms of the SOX compliance that you need at SA. What are the key hurdles that you need for that, and what's the timing? Is that something that takes a year, 2 years, nearer term?
Okay, thank you, Carla. There's no hurdle, it's just a project that we put it in place. I would say that 1 year, I think, could be enough for us to have SOX compliance in the entire company.
Okay. And I'm sorry, did you say you're not going to did you disclose or will you disclose the restricted group leverage, total debt, or cash?
Could you repeat, please, Carla?
The restricted group for the JBS USA restricted group, are you going to disclose the cash or debt at that level or leverage?
Yes, we will disclose that as we did in the past through the mailing for the bondholders.
Carla, just be clear, was always disclosed and we will continue to use the same website with the same information.
Perfect. Okay. And then just
the only thing that changed, Carla, the only thing that changed was the conference call. The website will be there, the information will be there, the same way that was disclosed in the past.
Perfect. Okay. That's what I was confusing. I remember you commenting on that last time. And then just one question, Australia. Thank you so much for breaking that out. It's super helpful. But since we don't have a lot of historic data for it, can you give us a sense for, is there a way to think about normalized margin in that market? Because I think it was traditionally a pretty high margin business for you, but I'm just wondering if there's a way to think about normalized margin range.
André, consider your long term to manage this market. I think you are in the better condition to answer this question.
Yeah, I'll start here and Wesley Filho put the colors that he thinks that I'm missing. So, Carla, when you talk about Australia, you need to understand that the business now is very, very different than the business in the past, okay? We still have the beef business there, the land business there, that are relevant, but now we have several other business. Primo business, that's a business that's over $1 billion Australian sales, 1.2 billion Australian in sales, Australian dollars in sales. We have the Huon business, and we have the Rivoli business. So when you look, and we're not going to disclose the margin business by business, we're going to disclose the margin for the whole Australia. It's hard to talk about normalized. Of course, in the beef business, beef specific segment business, we are still way below the volume. I commented before that Australia is still producing today because of the strong retention of cattle, because of the great condition that they in the grass, in the whole, pretty much in the whole Australia right now, and have been this way since last year. So the retention that started late in the 2020 was very strong in 2021 and continued through 2022. Its production in Australia is 30% and 40% below a normal level of production. So the margin way below what's the normal margin for Australia. That's why you say that when all this retention and the cattle start to come back to the market, we're going to see a much higher volume, much higher sales, and much better margin in the Australia beef segment. On top of that, whether we can comment better, the acquisitions that we just did, the business are just starting. They are just starting with our way to manage the business to increase the margin. So they are not being big contributors for the margins right now. So we are going to see a much stronger margin in the future when this business starts to deliver the new business and when beef go back to a more normal level of margin. So very, very bullish for Australia, especially for next year, starting 2022. Maybe even starting the fourth quarter of this year, but most probably for the next year.
Okay, great. That's super helpful.
Yeah,
thank
just
you
to complement,
much. I'll let you go on.
Just to complement, Carla, what Andre is saying is, you know, especially the two businesses which we have just acquired, they are businesses that on a percentage basis should contribute for a higher overall average margin. So, you know, we know that the salmon business, when it's in a normalized pre-COVID margin, in which we are seeing that we are reaching that type of margin today, it's a business that has pretty high double digits, right? And the pork business in Australia has a pretty good margin today with a lot of opportunities. It's already operating in double digits with a lot of opportunity for us to still improve our business there. So there is lots of things that we can do in the plant, in the live part of the operations that can really improve. And on top of that, like Andre mentioned, we on top of that we have the Primo business, which also is a business that should operate with double digit margins, and should be a business that does well. So with the beef business in and sheep and lamb business in Australia recovering, we should have a pretty good business going there.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lucas Ferreira with JP Morgan.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity. My first question is regarding your, let's say, processed food or high value-added mix. I remember in the past you mentioned something like a high double digits exposure in your portfolio. But since I've been doing a lot of acquisitions, wondering if you have a sort of a new estimate of or a new number of what's the current exposure of the company to more high value-added category, maybe those, I don't know, with them 10% plus margins or stable prices. So if you have something to give us and sort of if you have a number you aim to have in the mid to long run. And then the second question is more specific about the Brazil beef business, which was one of the underperforming units in the quarter. Despite of the strong prices of exports out of Brazil, I think you did not yet capitalize on that in the margin side. So what to expect for second quarter, second half of the year, if you already see improvements in profitability? I know cattle prices are still elevated, but not sure if you can compensate that by strong export prices mainly. Thank you.
Lucas, thank you for the question. I will ask for Wesley to start to answer about beef in Brazil. And I want to understand better your first question. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, Tomazoni, sure. So the total JBS exposure to processed food, if you can give me an estimate of how much a processed food or high value-added products represent of your total net sales, for instance.
Okay, Lucas, good morning. I'll start here with Beef Brazil. So we started the first quarter compared to the previous year with a higher cattle cost in Brazil. We had some regions, especially the west of Mato Grosso, that had a very short supply, so especially short in that region, which was a tough start of the year. We are in a similar scenario to Australia. We are in a herd recovery in Brazil, and we are currently seeing calf prices being a little bit lower, which indicate a higher offer of calves currently, which will probably benefit the next couple of years. But having said that, it was on the quarter was a tougher than previous year start of the quarter from on a cattle supply perspective, especially in the west of Mato Grosso. So, we have a very strong export business, but we are also very, very, we have a good share of the domestic market, which was especially underperformed in the first quarter. And we, with response to that, we increased our export during the first quarter. And we're starting already to see at the beginning of this next quarter and the end of the first quarter, a recovering overall performance of the beef business, especially in the domestic market with this increase in exports we have. One important part of the outlook for this business is, we have a suspension of the one of our plants to China, which is Mozarlândia, is a big plant for us. We are compensating that loss in capacity to export to China with the other plants we have. So it's not going to be we're not going to have the full impact of that plant being suspended. We already had a second audit in that plant from the Chinese, and we're expecting the result of that audit should come out anytime soon. So we're pretty optimistic that we're going to resume normal trade to China. with Brazil, but still it's an uncertainty going forward. Having said that, with regards to the domestic market and other export markets, we have rebalanced our operations, and we have a better outlook going forward than what we had in the first quarter. Another part that I think is important, we have been for a long time improving our value-added categories in Brazil. We have the Açougue Nota 10 program, which today already has 1,870 stores in Brazil. It's growing very fast, especially with the high value of beef being able to at store level, being able to increase the value of meat and bring savings to our and efficiencies to our partners is being valued very, very heavily, and this is a program that's growing very, very steadily. So difficult start to the year, but we see an overall better trend for the second quarter.
And Lucas, the question about the value added, we manage the business like we disclose the results, and we have value added and brand in each one of the business inside of the business. Of course, we have some businesses, practically brand, that we have Swift prepared food in the U.S., but it's a small part, because if you consider that we have in Pilgrim's a part of prepared foods as well, we have brands there. We have in beef, we have in the pork, then we have Friboi, as we had just mentioned. They have some brands, some value add. Then you have Australia, as the same thing that we manage as a whole, and this because it's a challenge to give you a precise answer on that. And apologize, but I cannot give you really the numbers because it will be not precise. Maybe we can have a discussion with you and explain to you better how we manage in a separate way. Maybe you can give you a perception about it. I can tell you in terms of size, it's big. It's more than $10 billion, but it's just an idea. I not have numbers to confirm if this is correct or not. Just give you an impression, more than $10
billion. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carlos Laboy with HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello everybody. I have two related questions. One is, can you update us on how you're managing through this very tight U.S. labor market as you look out through the rest of the year? And on a related basis, you've spoken before on how you've made some robotics and automation research investments, I think, in New Zealand. Can you update us on any meaningful developments that are happening in this field, or any relief that you might be able to get from these investments at some point in terms of automation and robotics in your plants?
Andre, about the comment of labor market in the U.S., maybe you can give an answer, then I give you about our strategy for automation.
Thanks for the question, Carlos. So labor, it's very tight, not only in the U.S., it's tight in the U.S., it's tight in Europe, it's tight in Canada, it's tight in Australia. What we're doing as a company is become the company of choice for the labor. We invest in compensation a lot over the last 2 years, make sure that we are a leader in terms of compensation in our industry. And the hourly rate here, just to give you a perspective, in the U.S., in the beef and the pork segment, the average wage is probably around $25 per hour. So if you compare that with minimum wage, if you compare that with other industry, we are very, very competitive because it's a very competitive market right now. But more than that, we're investing a lot in our facilities, in a welfare area in our facilities. I can guarantee you that now our facilities is state of the art in terms of welfare and everything that touch the employees. We're investing in the communities with our Hometown Strong program here in North America, more than $100 million in the communities that our team members live, for them to be proud about the company, proud about the community. We're investing in housing, because in housing some of these communities is a big challenge to attract labor. We create the Better Futures program for our team members and their dependents when we have more than 2,800 people already signed up for the program. So what we're doing as a company is become the best that we can be in our industry to be extremely competitive. And it's working. We have more availability of labor now. Turnover is going down. It's not equal in every market, in every state. The competitive is very different state by state. But I can say that our strategy and our investment is working. It's moving the right direction. We expect that this will continue to improve as we continue to collect the results of our investments.
André, can you give some figures about the automation in the U.S. as well?
Yeah, we've been investing heavily in automation several segments. So in the deboning, the chicken side, we are investing heavily, and Fabio and the PPC have been commenting about that, all the investment to put automated deboning. We've been investing heavily in the pork plants in every area that we can have automation. We just approved a new warehouse, full automated warehouse that uses Scott technology capacity that we're going to implement in Canada. That's a potential important reduction in labor on top of better quality. Scott technology have a project with Pilgrims that they develop a trace to trace the chickens that are pre-labor intensive. So we continue to work with Scott, but not only with Scott, and we continue to invest heavily in our plans to improve the quality of the labor that we can have, reduce some of the most difficult jobs in the plant, and improve efficiency to face and to try to combat as much as we can with operational excellence the increasing cost that we're seeing in several areas.
And Carlos, if you ask for one, is our global strategy of automation. I can say we have a global team focused on Industrial 4.0. They are sharing knowledge. They are discussing opportunities in each one of the regions, but they share benchmarking. And we are in a close contact with all of the suppliers in order to understand the opportunities. And when we have opportunity that makes an economic sense for automation, we are investing. This is one of the main routes of investment is automation. Chicken is easier than the other business for automations, and prepare is easy to automation. I think we are going faster on this. In Lamp in Australia, we have a plant full automated by Scott, and as André mentioned, Scott is an independent company, is a public company, but we are creating an opportunity for Scott to develop a line for automation and food. And we are, it's already done in US, and we are developing in other geographies, because I believe we can develop a proprietary technology and on top of the what is available in the market.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. This concludes today's question and answer session. I would like to invite Mr. Tomazzoni to proceed with his closing statements. Please go ahead, sir.
I would like to thank you, all of you, to attend this conference call and our thank you for our team members, more than 250,000 team members around the world that is they're responsible for these great results. Thank you.
That does conclude JBS's audio conference for today. Thank you very much for your participation. Have a good day, and thank you for using Chorus Call.